America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins, and as always, it's Chris Deloge. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so this episode is going to be for May 21st, 2021. And some shit went down this week. The stuff that was happening over in Gaza, it got to the point that even the people you normally would not associate with speaking out started speaking out. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Israel straight up destroyed the building that the Associated Press was using.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other shit, too. It really just, like, it was something that it feels like it heated up, like, out of nowhere. But if you actually, like, pay attention to the events on the ground, you could kind of seen it coming. But the Israel stuff wasn't the only thing that went down this week. We also had some more bullshittery in the political front. Matt Gaetz looks like his case is stinking and fast. We got some news from the Supreme Court, some good and some bad. We've also got news that there might be a January 6th commission coming, which, don't you remember, January 6th, that was when the beer belly putsch happened and failed miserably. We got a bunch of other stuff happening too, as well as some entertainment news. And yeah, we got all of that and more on this week's edition of Let's Weekend. So, with that out of the way, Chris, let's start how we always start off with. What have you been up to this week?
Summer is finally here. So we're hitting the 80s a lot. Which is annoying. Now it's just fucking hot as hell all the time. That's been the big issue all week, is just by the end of workday, just being soaked with sweat. Trying to deal with that. Which usually just means, you know, try to get a shower as soon as I can after work. Whatever feels best. But yeah, that is has definitely been a big issue. But as for stuff I've been doing, not really been doing too much. Been playing some more, or watching some more My Hero Academia.
Where are you now there exactly?
Nearing the end of season 2 at some point. Just finished the tournament and everybody's picking their hero names. Which had some nice little humor bits in there, as Bakugo wants to be called, I think it's King Explosion Murder. And then the alternate is Lord Explosion Murder. I don't know what his final name is. I don't think they reveal it.
No.
But it's not surprising that Deku picks Deku for his title. Though they do go into more of this new big villain that's shown up, the Hero Killer. That didn't kill him, but seriously hurt Ida's brother.
Yeah.
Who kind of suggests that he should take the name because he might be paralyzed from then on. Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
So, the Hero Killer, his whole arc is actually really fascinating because he's basically... At least in the comic, his whole whole point of his storyline is he's kind of a massive rip on the whole 90s dark anti-hero thing that became a big deal in comic books. And he's basically the living embodiment of that, more or less.
Yeah, and the way his design is very much harkens to that kind of thing compared to your typical anime design, like the rest of the show. Yeah, is.
Especially like his scarves and everything are very like Todd McFarlane-esque with the way they're all like tattered and everything. Yeah.
That was the thing I noticed, is like he kind of looks like shit compared to everything else, and I guess that's partly the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
That he's modeled after a lot of shitty designs.
Yeah, he's kind of he's got bits of like there's like bits of Spawn and some of the guys from Youngblood and basically all the sort of like shitty 90s dark hero wannabes that were fucking everywhere back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's been good. They hint at some dark things about to happen, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I'll keep watching and see how that goes. Mm. But as for games, not been playing too much. I put a good bit of time into No Man's Sky today because of the news that their current expedition, which is sort of the feature they added a few months ago, that is basically like a maybe Diablo-style season sort of thing, where there's one save that people can sort of work on as a community to complete these different objectives to work towards like an ultimate goal at the end. Kind of a seasonal kind of thing. And they decide, you know, where you start, what sort of goals you have, items and such that you start with and perks and all that kind of stuff. So like right off the bat, you don't have some of the things that you typically start without. So you can kind of mine some more things and immediately start making some exo vehicles, like your little like driving vehicles, that kind of stuff. That is pretty nice. You have a freighter and a ship that are all ready to go. Like the initial stuff is basically just make a vehicle so you can drive over to the ship and then get to that, get to your freighter, that kind of stuff. Essentially start. But the ultimate thing that you unlock by doing everything, all the goals in it, is to unlock the Normandy for use in the game.
Which, thematically appropriate, I would suppose.
Yeah. I don't know what sort of vehicle it is. I'll look into more of that for Sunday when we'll talk about it proper.
Yeah. But,
yeah, it's a neat tie-in to have. Mm. Makes me hope that they can get more of that kind of stuff. Even if it's just like, hey, let's have versions of the like rover vehicle that are, you know, Rocket League style cars, that kind of stuff. That would be neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the main thing I've been playing. Into.
See, I still have not.
Go ahead.
I still have not had a chance to play No Man's Sky yet, and yeah, I really feel like I'm missing out now.
Yeah, you definitely should check it out.
Yeah, I need to scrounge enough cash together so I can get it and Biomutant, because that's the big release that's coming up next week. For those of you who don't know, Biomutant comes out Tuesday. It is definitely one of my most anticipated games. As for me, I am currently still playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition. I'm still on Mass Effect 1. And keep in mind, it's been a long time since I played the first Mass Effect. But I'm pretty sure I'm getting near the last third of the game, at least the major story arc. I still got like a bunch of side quests and stuff I need to take care of, but And I've actually gotten a lot of the trophies as well, at least for Mass Effect 1. So I'm probably going to have to, once this is over, by the time I get to number 2, I might have to take just a little bit of a break. Because Mass Effect, I had forgotten not only just how much fun the first Mass Effect game was, but also just how much content they managed to jam into that first game without having to resort like a bunch of DLC content either. The first Mass Effect is, because of the extensive use of the Mako, that, you know, you don't end up using, you know, you don't, like, yeah, you don't have the Mako in Mass Effect 2. The one time you have anything approaching the Mako is for that one DLC mission. But the thing with the Mako is you end up landing on these, like, planets that are, you know, they've got, like, spots of, you know, content here and there, but they're mostly just wide open and empty. And it's not necessarily that big of a deal, considering, you know, actually piloting the Mako is actually, like, intuitive now and not an absolutely frustrating endeavor like it was in the original. So it look, and, you know, the graphics have been punched up too, so it looks great while you're doing it. But yeah, it's just, there is a lot of game in the first Mass Effect that I had forgotten had been there. So yeah. In the meantime, while I'm also doing that, and anticipating Biomutant, I am playing Streets of Rage 4 still. I've managed to beat 3 out of the 4 retro boss fights that happened in that game. For those who are not familiar with Streets of Rage, who haven't played Streets of Rage 4 yet, in the game, there are all these areas you'll come across where you'll find these, like, retro-style, bare-knuckle arcade cabinets. And usually when they show up, at least, like, most of the times I see it, you'll usually have an enemy or a crate somewhere nearby that will have a taser. Every so often in the game, as you're going through various levels, you'll come across a retro-style bare-knuckle arcade cabinet, because that's what the Streets of Rage series is called in Japan. It's called bare-knuckle. And usually when the cabinets show up somewhere nearby, there may be an enemy or like a crate or something, or it could just be hiding in plain sight. There's a taser that you can pick up. And the thing about the taser is literally a one-use weapon. You can, if you use it against the enemy, it can only be used at one time. But if you use it against one of these arcade cabinets, it'll take you to a retro boss fight. And it basically, it'll take you back from the boss fights from, like, Streets of Rage 2 and Streets of Rage 1. The problem with the fourth one is it's basically 2 boss fights in one, because you're not only having to deal with a bunch of mooks there, you're having to deal with Shiva, who at the time that was happening was Mr. X's right-hand man. So you get him and beat him, and then you have to fight Mr. X. And Mr. X has this freaking machine gun with him that can basically rake across the entire screen. And takes out a good chunk of your life if he manages to hit you with it. And if you end up losing in one of these retro boss fights, that's basically it. You don't have another chance. You have to restart the whole level again to do it. So, managed to get all the first 3s but that one. And I intend on getting back to it eventually. Also, as far as you were mentioning My Hero Academia and anime and everything, so you know that My Hero Academia is in Shonen Jump, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's another Shonen Jump series that I recently got into Mostly because it's like the last thing you would ever expect to become, to actually be published in the pages of Shonen Jump, simply because of how unbelievably bizarre and violent it is. Now, don't get me wrong, Shonen Jump used to have a lot of pretty violent manga at one time or another. And I don't mean like, you know, Dragon Ball style punch, punch, kick, kick, everybody gets bruises type of violence. I mean guns out, limbs come off, blood on the floor type violence. And they haven't done one of those in a long time because, well, mostly it's because in the 90s there was this like weird moral panic that started up in Japan about overly violent manga after that one dude who was a serial killer started luring a bunch of young girls and killed them. And when he was captured, the police found like a bunch of particularly violent pornographic manga on his person. So for a long time, Shonen Jump kind of shied away from that type of content. Not anymore, because of one particular manga I have become damn near obsessed with. That last I checked is like on its 11th volume right now, and it's called Chainsaw Man. And it's literally about a dude who basically grew up having to like sell bits and pieces of him to the Yakuza because his parents died with a massive debt to the Yakuza to him. So he's had to like donate his organs and shit to him. And so he's basically forced to working as like an illegal courier. And then while he's out there, he ends up dying. He ends up dying because the Yakuza turn on him and kill him because they consider him like a loose end that needs to be tied up. And what happens is he has this weird little dog that's been hanging out with him that, for whatever reason, can produce like a enormous chainsaw from its face. And this dog ends up melding with him, ends up replacing his heart, and it gives him the power to basically produce these enormous chainsaws from his head and hands. And it goes up again. He ends up going up against these other similar creatures who all are just so fucking disturbing. It is weird how insanely fucking violent this is, and yet also how kind of goofy it can be at the same time. And yeah, if you get a chance, just read it. Just trust me on this. It is so goddamn outrageous. I cannot believe it that Shonen Jump, that Shueisha is actually willing to publish it in the pages of Shonen Jump. Seriously. So other than that, really, I'm just kind of having to deal with basically the fruit fly war, you know, week two. The fruit flies are now kind of dissipating in number, but they still manage to find places to hide in and swarm around that you normally would not expect. So I'm having to set up more fucking vinegar traps everywhere. And frankly, I'm just getting sick of them. They're annoying. I wish they'd go away. Wish I didn't have to get used to the smell of apple cider vinegar because that shit stinks. But yeah, that's pretty much been it. Yeah. So you got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
No? Okay. Well then, it's now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So I mentioned Shonen Jump earlier, and like, you know, how, especially for us here in the U.S., Shonen Jump like kind of dominates both the anime and the sort of manga market in just a lot of ways. Because think of like all the anime that you know of that is somehow related to Shonen Jump in some way that has been originally from the pages of Shonen Jump. Like, you know, I mentioned Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball is a good one. One Piece, Naruto, Bleach, And that's just like within the last 20, 25 years. There's also newer ones like My Hero Academia, Promised Neverland. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, weirdly enough, was a long runner in Shonen Jump for like from like the early 80s all the way up to like the early to like the early to mid 2000s. Yeah, Shonen Jump's been around a hot minute, and its popularity is very obvious from just the enormous amount of properties and IPs it's produced that still manages to churn out just a shit ton of money. But that kind of underpins the fact of just how insanely popular Shonen Jump actually was as a magazine at one time. And the numbers that I talk about here are something that are so insane that there are magazines, like storied magazines over here in the Western world that would just salivate at the kind of numbers that Shonen Jump was doing at its height. So let me ask you a quick question. When Shonen Jump was at its height, how many copies do you think it sold every week? And remember, I'm saying week because weekly Shonen Jump is in fact a weekly magazine. So give me just give me a guess.
500K.
Not even close. We're all talking right. Millions here. So try again.
6 mil.
You're getting closer. At its height, from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, it circulated and sold. Here we go. You ready for this? 6.53 million copies per week, with a total readership of 18 million people in Japan. Okay? Now, compare that to when Time Magazine was at its highest circulation. The biggest copies it put out back in its day, do you know how much it was? About 3.45 million. So this manga magazine managed to actually outsell Time Magazine, one of the most storied news and culture publications in the Western world, 2-1. Now, if you're wondering how it is they're able to do this, part of the reason is just the nature of how, you know, weekly manga magazines are published in Japan. If you've ever seen an authentic Japanese copy of Weekly Shonen Jump, you would probably think that somebody had dropped a fancy-looking phone book. Because your average weekly Shonen Jump magazine tends to, or really just any shonen manga magazine of that era, generally is published by around 500 to 600 pages every week. Well, usually the low end, it'll be like 400. And the reason they're able to do this is because they basically are published using cheap newsprint, basically. If there's any like color or anything, it'll usually be on inserts that are specifically like made out of slightly higher grade paper, or maybe occasionally there'll be plastic inserts. A lot of times, especially for at least up into the early 90s, any type of quote unquote color pictures, pages that you would see in there would usually only be published with like 3 or 4 colors in total. So it would usually be like a sheet of like blacks and reds and greens, you know, very basic primary colors type stuff that typically they tried their best not to clash. But the thing is, as you probably are well aware, with the rise of the internet, and you know, digital publishing, obviously the magazine doesn't sell nearly that much as it did. This the last time the circulations were measured was in 2019. And there, the height of their circulation, at least for physical copies, was 1,640,000, which is still pretty respectable for, especially for a physical copy in this day, for a physical magazine in this day and age. And it still manages to like outsell all of the other manga publications in Japan. The other major like shonen magazines, like Weekly Shonen Magazine, Shonen Sunday, Shonen Champion, all those other magazines, most of them at their height, well, I mean, they used to sell like millions of copies just like Jump did. But these days, the biggest, best they can do at the absolute height is like around 900,000. That is how unbelievably fucking popular this magazine was once was in Japan. And it kind of represents like the absolute height of like the most circulated magazine in a country with a free press like Japan. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. And now you feel smarter. All right. With that, it is now time to move on to everybody's least favorite part of the show, which is our show proper, and it's the assholes of the week. Because we got to talk about a few assholes. And yeah, Israel is one of them, but they're not the main one. This week, our assholes of the week is kind of a symbiotic thing between the Supreme Court of the United States and the state of Mississippi. Because SCOTUS is taking up an abortion rights case from Mississippi that, depending on which way it goes, could completely undercut Roe v. Wade entirely.
Yeah. This is one of those topics that the Supreme Court was put together for.
Yeah.
With the and three justices that Trump appointed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this hails from Mississippi.
Because, of course, it comes from bans
most abortions after 15 weeks, significantly mm-hmm. before fetal viability.
Yeah.
Panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the most conservative country, blocked enforcement of the law, finding mm-hmm. it in conflict with Roe v. Wade and subsequent abortion decisions.
Yeah.
Mississippi appeal has been sitting on the court's docket awaiting disposition since last fall, about a month before Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And no indication why they waited so long to take this up, but now it's going to be taken up.
I might be able to explain why it's taken so long for a case like this to make it Supreme Court. It's because, quite cynically, abortion is like the one major vote getter that the Republicans have.
Yeah, but they don't usually hang on this stuff for this long.
Well, they also didn't have a president like Trump beforehand either.
Yeah.
And now they've basically gotten what they consider to be the ideal for the Supreme Court. Now, we said earlier that this is a case that could potentially completely undercut the entirety of Roe v. Wade. But whether or not that actually ends up being the decision hands down is actually not as likely as you would think it would be. The Supreme Court tends to be extremely timid when it comes to abortion cases like this. Even during the Bush years, they were. And whether or not, you know, the court is in a place now where, you know, it's like their dream come true. But whether or not they're actually going to follow through with it is actually kind of still up in the air. Because what might actually be more likely to happen is instead of doing just like a straight undercut, they'll object to some things. They'll say some things are okay. And then they'll say some other parts are in need of further review, which in other words means they might restrict some things. And in the rest, they'll just kind of kick the can down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my guess anyway. Because, I mean, really think about it. Say they really do manage to get like Roe v. Wade completely overturned. What are the Republicans going to do after that?
Well, they'll keep pushing it for further and further aggressive time frames.
I mean, they could, arguably, but that would be a well that would very quickly run dry. And you know, the thing, I mean, the reason of the abortion topic became such a big deal with the Republicans in the first place was because it was the one thing they figured out could basically give them a permanent percentage of the American electorate. So oddly enough, they really can't ban abortion because otherwise it would basically cripple them as a party going forward. At least that's how I see it. But unfortunately, the abortion bullshittery doesn't end with that, because we've also got Governor Greg Abbott from Texas, who signed an anti-abortion bill to ban all abortions as early as 6 weeks.
Yep. And yeah, this has some of the hallmarks we've seen before, where there's effectively no exception for pregnancies that are the result of rape or incest. It does include a rare provision that allows individual citizens to sue anyone they believe may have been involved in helping a pregnant individual violate the ban.
Mm-hmm.
The provision cannot be used against pregnant people, but reproductive rights advocates warn it can be used to target abortion providers and abortion rights activists.
Mm-hmm.
So is that whole wrinkle of you can just sue anybody you think helped. If you suspect that someone got an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
It sure is a Texas thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's usually for, especially in Texas, this type of shit is like mostly a thing that they do for show. It's mostly political theater. Most of the time, they don't expect it to actually last. Usually it gets overturned at some point. But the problem is, with the Supreme Court as it is now, that becomes lesser and lesser of the possible outcome. So, yeah. And we got other bullshittery from another governor, this time the governor of Tennessee, who has signed a bill into law that requires businesses and government facilities to put up signs saying that they allow transgender people to use the bathroom of their choice.
Yeah,
so in other words, they're trying to create a safe space for cishet people.
Yeah, the sign that is that they would be requiring says, "This facility maintains a policy of allowing the use of restrooms by either biological sex, regardless of the designation on the restroom,"
mm-hmm.
which is a shitty way of putting that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of further pushing the there's only two genders kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As well as there's a whole weird part of this where, let's see, the governor, Bill Lee, is up for re-election next year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that, let's see, he signed legislation earlier that puts public schools in their districts at risk of losing civil lawsuits. They let transgender mm-hmm. students mm-hmm. or employees use multi-person bathrooms or locker rooms that do not reflect their sex at birth. It was the first bill restricting bathroom use by transgender people signed in any state in about 5 years. But he signed this proposal that bars, he also signed a different proposal this year that bars transgender athletes from playing girls' public high school or middle school sports.
Mm-hmm.
And this also has the sort of caveat that the law doesn't spell out what sort of consequence there is for this. It doesn't spell mm-hmm. out fines, penalties, or any other mechanism to ensure the signs are put up when required. Republican Representative Tim Rudd, bill sponsor, said no state department will ever seek compliance with the law. Instead, local district attorneys could seek a court order to require a facility to post the sign. If an entity refused to comply, quote, it would open the door for whatever judicial remedies the court deems appropriate. Additionally, it's possible the noncompliance could lead to civil liability. And the ACLU of Tennessee said the legislation is impermissible, compelled speech in violation of the First Amendment, and raises substantial due process and equal protection concerns.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no lawsuit has been filed yet. to try to counter.
Oh, there will one be.
But yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the ACLU is already, like, typing up the letters as we speak.
And also, this governor's signed legislation requires school districts to alert parents 30 days in advance before students are taught about sexual orientation or gender identity. Parents could also opt their students out of the lesson. The requirement would not apply when a teacher is responding to a student's question or referring to a historic figure or group.
Mm.
It's other weird tight-roping bullshit.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And, yes, of course, our last S of the week is Israel, who finally agreed to a ceasefire with Hamas to stop the just absolute fucking atrocity that they're committing against the Palestinians in Gaza right now. Basically, it got so bad that even the normal allies, there were representatives and senators in the here in the U.S. Congress who were getting ready to do something that is damn near unprecedented, which is filing enough objections to the annual, monetary aid package to Israel that it would actually have to go to debate and then an actual vote. That has never happened before. And part of me wants to think that played into Israel finally agreeing to this, because if you hear anybody tell you if the U.S. decided to cut them off, it would basically spell absolute fucking disaster for the current establishment in Israel. Just absolute, just period. And why it got to that point is because, I mean, obviously Israel has been doing this shit to the Palestinians for goddamn decades now, but we have the luxury now of video streaming, so you can actually watch this shit happen as it's unfolding, and we have the fact that the Israelis are apparently bloodthirsty enough that they were willing to completely topple a fucking building owned by the Associated Press and other media, like, on camera, as it was fucking happening. Like, there is actually a fucking footage you can watch of these people on Al Jazeera as they're recording, their daily segment, and they're watching their fucking building collapse in Gaza. Like, yeah, just fucking hell. That was basically what finally turned the mainstream press in the U.S. against them. Even though, parts of the mainstream press have yet to actually make that point.
Yeah.
It was a fucking travesty. And unfortunately, just because Israel government has agreed to a ceasefire doesn't mean they've stopped the other shenanigans. Apparently, they raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque again earlier this week, and apparently they're also doing some other shit in Jerusalem as we speak. So, yeah.
Yeah. You can tell how one-sided this has been, because about 230 people, Palestinians, were killed, probably more injured.
Yeah,
but only 12 people in Israel have been killed.
And don't get us wrong; those 12 people dying in Israel is a tragedy. There is no that there is nothing like that. But this is a situation of proportionality here. 20 to 30 people are dying for every Israeli that has been killed, and the violence against the Palestinians has been indiscriminate.
Yeah, plenty of terrible stories of parents hoping to lessen the suffering should they be bombed, that kind of stuff, or finding ways for, I think one was basically these two fathers sort of swapping the kids so that if one of them is bombed, they know their kids are safe with the other one.
Yeah. And I want to bring, I also, I need to bring this up because it needs to be brought up. There are Jews who live in Gaza, okay? There are Jews who live in the other parts of Palestine. There are Jews who live in the eastern part of Jerusalem, but the Israeli government doesn't care. Because the truth of the matter is, if you're not the right kind of, if you're not a white or European descended Jew, you're basically treated like shit in Israel. Ask anybody about what happened to all the Ethiopian Jews who tried to immigrate to Israel, and all of the Ethiopian Jews who were youth, who were sterilized against their will by the Israeli government. And yes, you heard me correctly, sterilized, as in snip, snip. Or my friend and his family who were Yemenite Jews who fled to Israel during the Nakba because they thought they would have refuge in Israel because they were Jews too. And the Israeli government shoved them into ghettos of abject poverty so bad that they ended up having to flee from Israel, which was supposed to give them as Jews a refuge, to the United States. Okay? Because you have to understand, all that talk about Israel being a Jewish state is bullshit. It's a white supremacist state more than anything else, period. And I think whenever anybody tries to bring up all that bullshit about, you know, there needs to be a Jewish homeland, always remind them about what the Israeli government does to all of the Jews they don't consider to be white enough. Because it's rank fucking hypocrisy, and it's time people call them out for it. Fortunately, it's not all bad news. We do have heroes of the week. We do have some heroes of the week. First is the United States itself, because now that the United States is now on the up and up and getting over the COVID pandemic, finally, we are now shipping 20 million additional COVID-19 vaccines overseas to places where they are desperately much needed.
Yep. Yeah, majority of the planned shipments will be the AstraZeneca vaccine. Does not yet have authorization in the U.S., mm-hmm. but there will also be Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines going out. Plans to have about 80 million doses distributed overseas by the end of June. And about 60 million of that will be AstraZeneca.
Mm-hmm.
The other 20 will be Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson.
Yep.
Hopefully sending a lot of that south of the equator, because they need especially in Africa.
Yes, and India especially.
Yeah.
India is in a serious fucking... It's bad. It's very bad over there. And we'll see. But another good thing happened is President Joseph Biden, he signed a bill to fight anti-Asian hate crimes into law. This was very much needed after the fucking last administration, who did everything it could to scape both China and the Chinese community for everything COVID-19 related.
Yeah. Yeah. Passed the House 364 to 62. With all the no's being Republicans, as you'd expect. But yeah, Biden signed it. It'll help. Where is that here? Expedite the review of hate crimes at the Justice Department, make grants available, help local law enforcement agencies improve their investigation, identification, reporting of incidents driven by bias, which often go unreported. Mm. So yeah, very needed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. And finally, last hero of the week is Washington Governor Inslee, who signed 12 bills into law this week to overhaul policing. Yeah, so yeah, tell us what these are, because some of them are kind of big deal.
Yeah, let's see. Legislation passed the police accountability measures in response to sweeping calls nationally and locally to reform policing after the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Let's see, where's the folks of the bills run the gamut from tactics officers use in the field to how deadly force incidents are investigated to the circumstances under which officers can be decertified. Other bills signed will establish a statewide use of force database so that police agencies notify prosecutors about officers with credibility issues, Make it easier for families to sue the police over deadly force encounters. He also signed a bill that instructs the state auditor to review all completed deadly force investigations to ensure that rules and procedures were followed. He also signed bills that aim to give defendants additional protections. One requires police to electronically record interrogations of juveniles and interrogations of adults who face felony-level charges. The second requires police to give juveniles access to an attorney before they waive any constitutional rights or consent to be interrogated. And the final bill creates a state-funded grant program administered by the Department of Commerce to fund local projects aimed at building partnerships between communities and law enforcement.
All right. Yeah, good shit. Definitely was in need of an overhaul, that's for sure. All right. Yeah, all right, and now... Washington. Yeah. But yeah, okay. Moving on to the proper show proper in our major stories for the week. The first big one is it was announced this week that the New York's district attorney and their probe into the Trump Organization has now gone into a criminal inquiry. So this is no longer a civil thing. It's criminal.
Yep. Yeah, they've widened their probe into the Trump Organization, including examination of potential criminal wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the office was investigating former President Donald Trump's namesake company in a solely civil matter, with New York Attorney General Letitia James focusing on whether the company improperly valued its assets for loan and tax purposes. But yeah, the investigation has entered a criminal capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We've informed the Trump Organization that our investigation into the organization is no longer purely civil in nature. So yeah. Additional details can be shared at this time. Let me be clear whether the former president himself, members of his family, are part of this latest criminal investigation. Also clear whether when the Attorney General notified the Trump Organization of the broadening scope of the probe. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely going to find some shit. Now, whether or not it's actually going to end up with any like substantial penalties to Trump himself, maybe even some fucking jail time, hope, is up in the air. But he's got a good 30 years of bullshit that they control through. And, if you know anybody who has lived in New York in the past 30 years, Donald Trump has never had a good reputation down there. He's always been known as a con artist and a fraudster who basically, you know, he's basically a glorified slumlord, basically, who pretends that he has opulence. But the reality is he always defrauds his investors. He never pays his fucking employees what they're owed. And we know from the last couple of years that he cheats the crap out of his taxes. And that's probably what they're finally going to get him on. So, yeah, good work. Michael Cohen certainly seems to think that an indictment is forthcoming. Now, Michael Cohen is also a compulsive fucking liar, so, you know, do with that what you will. But, I'm just happy for once it looks like they're finally putting the fucking screws to him. And I don't think he's going to get out of it in one piece this time. But finally, next up, another person whose chickens are coming home to roost, Matt Gaetz. His associate, Joel Greenberg, the guy who basically roped him into all this mess, is pled guilty to 6 federal charges. And pretty sure he's going to sing like a canary, too. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's part of his plea agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's word that an ex-girlfriend of Gaetz may also be working with the feds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, ex-girlfriend, I think, is actually the specific one that people are talking about. The one who was underage when he had sex with her. Then again, it seems like he kind of has a pattern of shit like this. So it may be someone different. for all I know. All I know is that Matt Gaetz is a fucking creep, and it's about goddamn time somebody called him on his bullshit. Yeah. Next up, we got some more Supreme Court news. This one's actually good. Supreme Court unanimously ruled against warrantless searches, which should be obvious. I'm pretty sure that's like in the first 10 amendments of the Constitution.
Yeah, this is, I think this is the one that was involving the gun rights thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as Justice Clarence Thomas said, the very core of the Fourth Amendment's guarantee is the right of a person to retreat into his or her home and there be mm-hmm. free from unreasonable governmental intrusion. The case mm-hmm. involved a heated argument between a long married couple, Edward and Kim Coniglia. Mm-hmm. He brought out a gun and told her to shoot him to put him out of his misery. Then after he left the house in a huff, she hid the gun and spent the night in a motel. The next morning, unable to reach her husband, she asked police mm-hmm. to escort her home because she was afraid he might have harmed himself. Police mm-hmm. found the husband on the front porch, sent him for a psychological evaluation later that day. Doctors concluded he was not a threat to himself or others and released him. Meantime, police had confiscated his guns and ammunition, so he sued, alleging an illegal search and seizure of his home.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
The lower courts ruled that the police could enter the home and under the so-called community caretaking exception to the Constitution's warrant requirements. But Thomas, writing for the unanimous court, noted that the recognition that police officers perform many civic tasks in modern society was just that, a recognition that these tasks exist and not an open-ended mm-hmm. license to perform them anyway. What is reasonable for vehicles is different from what is reasonable for homes, he said.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, it's one of the amendments of the Constitution. So, yeah, you would hope that they would say they would be against warrantless searches and seizures. So, yeah. Next up, the House of Representatives narrowly passed a bill to set up a commission to study the January 6th Bitter Belly Putsch, the insurrection, as most people call it. But as of course, as you could probably guess, Mitch McConnell plans to do whatever he can to stop it.
Yeah, he has specifically said, let's see, after careful consideration, I made a decision to oppose the House Democrats' slanted and unbalanced proposal for another commission to study the events of January 6th. They're saying he was basically saying, like, it's unclear what we could learn from this. People are like, that's what a commission's for. To actually figure out what we can actually learn from the events that happen and figure out if there's anything more that went on that we didn't know. Succeeded 252 to 175, 35 Republicans joining the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously it'll be tough to get passed in the Senate if the Republicans are in lockstep against it.
It would require, I'm pretty sure it only requires a simple majority.
Yeah.
To actually get, and they can get a majority, but whether or not, you know, because keep in mind, the Democrats technically have a majority in the Senate, but it's one that's, well, again, it's technical. Because the deciding vote is, you know, is Vice President Harris.
We have to hope that the couple of centrists in the Democrats aren't going to go against them. Like Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, and COVID-19 news. Trials are currently underway so that they can test COVID-19 vaccines for children that are 5 years old and younger, which would definitely be, that would be a good, if they can do that, if they can pull that off, that would be great, because that means we could literally just put this into those, you know, inoculations you get, you know, when you're a toddler.
Yeah. They currently doing a study in Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Testing about 144 children as part of the phase one clinical trial for mm-hmm. the Pfizer BioNTech. So, hopefully this works out well.
Yeah.
From that these kids can get it and be safe.
Yeah.
And start getting more kids getting vaccinated against the vaccine.
Yeah. Because if you could get it, so. COVID. Yeah, because if you could get this to like one of the, put it in that sort of like cocktail of inoculations that kids get when they're like 4 years old before they go into kindergarten. Yeah. That will be a huge step up in essentially making COVID-19 like the new polio.
Yeah. I'm hoping that this goes along smoothly so they could start doing it in the fall, maybe early next year.
Mm-hmm. In other news, and honestly, this next story doesn't really surprise me because, believe it or not, shit like this has a bad way of sticking around a lot longer than it really needs to. But in the state of Maryland, they repealed their Civil War era state song that called Lincoln a tyrant and a despot.
Yeah, they were technically.
And I know you're thinking, wait,
slave states.
Mm-hmm.
Though they didn't really take part in the Civil War.
Yeah, they were one of the sort of, they were one of the like two or three states that were essentially neutral.
Yeah.
In the conflict, more or less. And yeah.
They also referred to the Union as Northern scum.
Yep. Yeah, Maryland in the war, they were one of the, whenever anyone who's like a Confederate apologist will tell you about it, like, well, you know, there were slave states in the Union, they're usually talking, pointing at a state like Maryland. But the thing is, those states were basically in legal limbo through the entire war. You know, so, yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's song called Maryland, My Maryland, sung to the tune of O. Tannenbaum.
Yep.
Is based on a poem written in 1861 inspired by the Pratt Street Riot on April 19th of that year. Mm-hmm. Riot saw Southern sympathizers attack the 6th Massachusetts Infantry as they marched through Baltimore on the way to Washington, D.C. Days after the South Carolina militia fired the opening shots of the Civil War upon Fort Sumter.
That's right. Yep. Yeah,
Maryland was one of a handful of states, border states, that declined to secede from the Union.
Mm-hmm.
It was also unwilling to take up arms against the Confederacy.
Yeah.
But Marylanders fought, you know, either side, whatever they wanted to do.
Unofficially, Maryland's, you know, left the state and joined, you know, armies on their own volition. But the state itself never actually took a position in the war. But yeah, speaking of other bullshit in southern states that has stayed around far too goddamn long, the governor of Alabama recently signed a bill to unban yoga from schools, but they can't say the word namaste.
Yeah, this has been a ban that's been around since 1993.
Yep.
Spearheaded by Christian conservatives.
Yep.
Back then, who still backed the bans and said yoga would open the door for people to be converted to Hinduism, which makes zero sense.
Something that of course it doesn't make any fucking sense. But look at who we're talking about here.
Yeah, because people think that it's tied to religion in some way when most people do it for the purely exercising aspect of it.
Yeah.
It's like a way of,
well, I mean, yoga does have its roots in Hinduism. It did originally originate as a religious ritual practice, but it has long since outgrown that particular label.
Like a lot of things here in the US, we've whitewashed it enough that, you know, it's associated with, you know, well-to-do white women, you know, in the OC, kind of that's what they do in the mornings, do their yoga and then whatever else after that, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the new law allows yoga to be offered as an elective for grades K through 12 in public schools. While it erases a ban that over the years some schools did not realize existed, also imposes restrictions on how yoga should be taught. Students won't be allowed to say namaste, for instance. Meditation is not allowed. Chanting, mantras, mudras, use of mandalas, induction of hypnotic states, guided imagery, and namaste greetings shall be expressly prohibited. It also requires English names to use for all poses and exercises. And before any students try a tree pose, they'll need a parent's permission slip. Which I looked that up, and I'm not sure why that's a... Your parents need to approve this thing.
I think it was some weird kind of like... It was one of those things that happened during, like, the negotiation phase.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it was like, okay, fine, we'll let this one go. Just... Yeah, but yeah, it's a dumb fucking... It was a dumb fucking ban to begin with. And
Alabama adopted its yoga ban in schools in 1993, one of the many fronts in the culture wars in the United States. It was a fight to undo the ban. State Rep. Jeremy Gray, Democrat, first introduced a bill to revoke the yoga taboo more than a year ago. His new bill got final approval Monday, the last day of his of the legislative session in his term, I think it was. He did not like the language added by the Senate that required parental admission, permission slips and bans meditation associated with Eastern mystical traditions, but he went along with them to avoid missing the session deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said his experience...
Like I said... Go ahead. No, I was going to say, it's like... Again, it was like, it was the negotiation. It's like, fuck it. It's fine. Okay, we can deal with that shit later. Just... I'm okay with getting this now.
Yeah. He said his experience with yoga began when he played college football at North Carolina State University. He said studies have shown that yoga helps children cope with daily stressors and improves their behavior, flexibility, and strength along with their concentration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really fucking stupid.
Oh, yeah, here. The pro-yoga legislation was opposed by conservative groups, including former State Chief Justice Roy Moore's Foundation for Moral Law, the Alabama chapter of the Equal Forum, a conservative group that was founded by activist Phyllis Schlafly in 1972. Yoga is a practice of Hindu religion. The Equal Forum of Alabama sent an email, urged maintaining the ban of added religious practice in schools. And the schools constitutes a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Public schools cannot promote the practice of religion. It's like, it's the same place where you make a lot of kids say the Pledge of Allegiance.
This is where these are the same people who want prayer back in school.
Yeah, they want the right kind of religion in there.
Yeah.
And if they can't have theirs, nobody should have anything.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, the shocking fucking... Goddamn. Yeah, it's just like, it's the shocking goddamn hypocrisy of it.
Yeah,
and it's like, just go ahead. Yeah, just.
The group also alleges that each yoga pose was designed not as an exercise, but to be an offering of worship to Hindu gods. The Universal Society of Hinduism disagrees, calls yoga part of the world's heritage. A statement applauding Alabama lawmakers for voting to lift the yoga ban.
Yeah, you usually have to get into, like, really esoteric areas where people start to think that, like, certain Hindu poses are specific. It's stupid. It's stupid. It's really fucking stupid.
Yeah, they got a tweet here from somebody that talks about how this... thus do we close the book on one of the stupidest moral panics in Alabama history, which is really saying a lot. Quotes an article that says, most parents are unaware of what goes on in their classrooms, said Kathy Andrews, a Birmingham parent who spoke on behalf of the Collins proposal. She told of a relaxation tape her child brought home from Mountain Brook School that made one boy, quote, visibly high. Yoga made him high.
Look, if yoga really made you high, all the stoners that I knew would quit drugs altogether.
I mean, it wouldn't hurt. Probably help, actually.
It might. Yeah, anyway. Next up, Ford revealed their F-150 Lightning EV truck that starts under $40,000. It's a mostly all-electric pickup truck.
Yeah, it's all electric.
Yeah.
But they revealed.
And, go ahead.
But, yeah, Biden got to drive it around for a bit.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw the footage. He managed to basically go from, like, 0 to 80 in, like, a very short amount of time. Like, a good, yeah. It was, like, 4 to 5 seconds. So, this thing can definitely haul ass if it needs to.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interesting features, but the starting price is just under $40,000, which is pretty aggressively priced compared to gas-powered trucks.
Yeah.
And there's also the federal tax credit, too, that also helps.
Yeah. There's also, but y'all got to remember, though, that when stuff like this gets introduced, the price usually goes down after a couple of years. So it'd probably be around like $10,000-$20,000 probably this time by 2024.
I don't know about that, but because trucks are pretty expensive for the Ford.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Those are
trucks are already
says they're about $50,000 average.
Mm-hmm.
So the base range is about 230 miles, 300 with the upgrade. They can go up to about $90,000 for the highest, like, full feature package of that, which the charging can vary depending on where you're doing it. So your home charger, I think they say if you take that 300 miles range down to about 15%, to fill it back up would take like 20 hours, but I imagine most people aren't draining theirs that much in one day. Some people might, but I'd imagine you'd also want to charge it wherever you can. But if you get to some of the high chargers, you can, they say you can add a good 50 miles of range for every 10 minutes on a fast charger.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty ambitious for their first EV truck. And I think there's even some other stuff, like you can use it, like if you have a power outage, you can use the truck as a makeshift power source to power up other things. I think it has like 11 outlets in it. Seems to have pretty good towing capacity and all that, but that'll be put to the test when it actually gets out. Yeah, you can run multiple power tools at a work site or kitchen appliances at a campsite with it. Obviously, since it doesn't have an engine anymore, you can use the front part of it as a trunk or a frunk, as they say, as well as the back for towing, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and even when you, they say there's potentially a way for you to plug it into your house and essentially during like high peak hours, you may be able to offload some of your energy output to the truck or from the truck. So you can sort of rely on some of that if need be. So that's kind of a neat whole thing they've built into the whole truck. And makes a good first statement on, you know, the truck culture that we have here in the U.S. And it's kind of ridiculous at times because I imagine there are a lot of truck owners that don't do shit with their truck. They use it for the same things people use cars, like put very basic items in there. And there's stuff that they could easily have a car or an SUV or something like that. But people love their trucks for some reason. I enjoy seeing people with these big-ass trucks try and find the tiniest spots they can fit their truck into and fuck it up.
No. Next up, Eric Clapton went and got the AstraZeneca shots, and he ended up having some fairly severe reactions, which inspired him to go on this lengthy anti-vaccination rant that is just really fucking stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, he's also somebody that had a big anti-lockdown song.
Yeah, with Van Morrison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to make sure you know where he is on a lot of these sort of topics.
Yeah, but well, yeah, here's the thing you need to know about Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton may be one of the greatest musicians of the 20th century and one of the greatest living guitarists who lives among us. He's also also been an asshole for a very, very long time.
Yeah, he's made his career off of black music.
And being really racist. Yeah, people don't know that about Eric Clapton. Back in the 70s, back in the 70s, there was a guy who was in the English Parliament. His name was Enoch Powell. And Enoch Powell was notorious for his highly nativist anti-immigration views. And he infamously went on a tirade, a speech that he made in the House of Commons that's sometimes called the Rivers of Blood speech that is so shriekingly racist, I'm not going to repeat it here. But Eric Clapton, like a week after, got really fucking drunk, got up on stage and went on this long racist rant about how England needed to kick out all the blackies and the packies. His words, not mine. So he's been an asshole for a long fucking time, and this is not at all out of character for him.
Yeah. Here he said things like, I took the first jab of AZ and straight away had severe reactions, which lasted 10 days. I recovered eventually and was told it would be 12 weeks before the second one. About 6 weeks later, I was offered and took the second AZ shot, but with a little more knowledge of the dangers, needless to say, the reactions were disastrous. My hands and feet were either frozen, numb, or burning, and pretty much useless for 2 weeks. I feared I would never play again. I suffer with peripheral neuropathy and should never have gone near the needle. The propaganda said the vaccine was safe for everyone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they warned you of the risk before you took it.
Yeah. So
now, if you're like one of those people who, for health reasons, cannot take the vaccine, that's fine. Okay? My grandma is one of those people who could not take the vaccine because she already has enough health shit that it would cause something even worse in her. But she's the one who also encouraged me to go get the vaccine the first chance I could get. You know? So, what's his fucking excuse? But anyway, yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, like, we talk about how strong the anti-vax stuff over here is in the U.S., it's sadly even stronger over in Europe. And it's a fucking British doctor you have to blame for it, but that's another story. Next up, this week, AT&T and Discovery agreed to merge Warner Media with Discovery in a huge fucking merger deal. And once again, the monopoly on media is growing smaller and smaller.
Yeah. AT&T did not seem to do well with the Warner Media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wanted to get out of it. Ends up putting Discovery, which, if you do not know them, I wouldn't be surprised if people don't necessarily recognize the company, but they're the ones that own Discovery Channel and the various other sort of similar style of channels. Now own Warner Media, DC Comics, Warner Brothers, HBO, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's huge now that Discovery is one of the biggest companies in the media landscape next to Disney and the NBC Universal group. That's going to be interesting to see. We'll talk about the game aspect of this on Sunday, but
yeah,
it's kind of in a state where it seems like for the media side of it, the moving TV side of it is just going to keep going as is, but the game side, maybe not so sure what's going on. But yeah, this is looking to be a $43 billion merger, which is, bigger than, the Comcast and Sky Network one that happened a few years ago. The CBS Viacom one that happened a little less than 2 years ago was only $12 billion.
I'm telling you, we're going to wake up one day and we're going to find out that there's five companies who own fucking everything.
Kind of almost there.
We're almost there, but not quite. Anyway, next up, we got some good news, at least. A new Batman animated series has been ordered at HBO Max and Cartoon Network. And along with that, There's also a Superman series that's coming with it.
Yeah, the Batman series has Bruce Timm working on it, who is co-creator of the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
He's an executive producer on this. I guess called Batman Cape Crusader.
Mm-hmm.
Executive produced by Timm, along with J.J. Abrams and Matt Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
It will be produced by Warner Brothers Animation, Bad Robot Productions, and Sixth in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Superman one, yeah, is it's going to be Clark Kent, Lois Lane, a more family-friendly animated series.
Yeah, and you can tell by the art style what they're going for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, they're doing that thing where they're trying to make it relevant to the modern era.
Yeah, it's a two-season series order for My Adventures with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Was Man of Steel and the Dogged Daily Planet reporter in their 20s, as well as their best friend Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
As they begin to discover who they are and everything they can accomplish together as an investigative news team.
Yep.
Kind of a coming of age story.
Yeah.
A little weird it's happening kind in his 20s, but whatever.
Well, it's happening in his 20s because, you know, he's not in Smallville anymore.
Yeah. But still, he shouldn't be necessarily figuring this shit out in his 20s.
Well, you know how they say that modern adolescence now extends to like 25.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Yeah, anyway.
Interesting to see how that all turns out.
Yeah, especially with the art style. It's very, that sort of anime-esque sort of Cal art style. Pretty sure they can pull it off, though. Next up, Hocus Pocus 2. It is official. It is coming in fall 2022. And all of the original three witches are returning. Yes, even Bette Midler.
Yeah, Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathy Najimy.
Mm-hmm.
Who is now on the other side of King of the Hill at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be on Disney Plus. Yeah, it's be interesting to see how this happens, because now you don't see this kind of stuff happen too often where they're doing a sequel to something that's nearly 30 years old at this point.
Well, try to explain
how these three witches look a little bit different.
Yeah.
As they're, you know, quite a bit older.
Yeah. Well, Hocus Pocus is one of those movies that kind of gathered a huge cult following over the years.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. So.
Yeah.
And finally, we'll see. We'll see how it comes out. I don't really have much to remember by the original movie, though. I kind of thought it was okay.
That's pretty deep for what it is. Yeah. Especially as a time capsule of the 90s, because the actual bit in the high school with the parents, as far as the costumes and all that, it's pretty good.
Yeah. So
the mom wears the sort of traffic cone Madonna outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very, very, very 90s. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And finally, we got a trailer for Resident Evil Infinite Darkness, which is the Resident Evil series that we're having on Netflix. And,
It's July 8th on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. And it actually looks pretty good, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not sure what the story is all about, but it's gonna be, you know, Leon S. Kennedy and Claire Redfield.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of having this outbreak that has happened but is being kept a secret by the government.
Well,
they're trying to deal with it.
So that's kind of the thing that happens. That's kind of this weird thing that happens between Resident Evil 2 and 3. Resident Evil 2 and 4, to be more specific. Because Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 both happened like around the same time. But basically what happens is after the outbreak becomes confirmed and like basically overtakes the entirety of the city, the U.S. government dropped a non-nuclear, I forget what it's called. It's not a nuclear explosion. It's one of those things where it's like, it's a gigantic rod that's like fired from space at a specific point in the impact, like leaves like a crater. Yeah, basically that's what ends up happening to Raccoon City.
Yeah, but that's kind of their reboot of the sort of media part of the series.
I guess it could be.
The movies
yeah.
kind of are left off in their own thing as they're putting out a movie. I think this fall.
I think they are actually.
It has a weird title. It's like Welcome to Raccoon City.
Mm-hmm.
It's Resident Evil : Welcome to Raccoon City. It's just like, sure, you could just call it Resident Evil. People
yeah.
understood.
Well, there's been like, no, yeah, you're right. People would have understood because let's be honest, those other Resident
movie
Evil
is
movies
nearly 20 years ago, 20 years old.
Yeah, and not really that good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I gotta watch the trailer too, because damn, it looks good. Looks like a cutscene they got straight out of one of the games, actually. Yeah. So, yeah, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. Yeah. All right. So, I'd like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want to be on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes here, right next to a convenient little contact us at colon thing we have here. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, just wait a few minutes, because as soon as we find out one exists, we almost immediately wink up with them and start spreading our little bit of insanity over there, too. You cannot beat us. We are inescapable. We are inevitable. We're kind of like Thanos, but not nearly as ambitious. But, yeah. Anyway, so, with that, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and for my buddy here, Chris Logie, say good night, sleep tight, and if you haven't gotten it yet, get your fucking vaccine shot. We'll see you next week.